Oh man. I know I said start the music, but I'm not ready. Oh, jeez. All right. Oh, look, and I start today, too. Hey, everybody, it's Kyle.
I know. I got you, buddy. We're back. I'm Molly Wood, and we are back with Make Me Smart, the podcast about tech, the economy, and culture production process in progress. Mostly, at least in this moment in time, we are talking about coronavirus, just like everybody else. It just so happens that so many of these stories, whether it's the status of the healthcare system or the impact of school closing or the markets, are in fact the bread and butter of Make Me Smart. We are going to continue our coverage today. We are calling it day 20 of living in coronavirus land.
I guess you did.
That's according to Sam did. Sam wrote it in the rundown. He's good at math. So if we're starting from March 11th, I could have done that. 31 minus 11. That was doable even for me.
Oh man.
We got a lot to do today.
Okay, and here is just a taste of what we have to do today. We're going to start with a letter from one of y'all. His name is Christopher Bartlett, and he wrote in talking about a thing that I'm sure a lot of you are feeling, and here's what he said. I'm doing all the right things. I've suspended all work for the construction company I own in Illinois. I've made sure my workers could get paid. I'm also really struggling both from a business finance standpoint and our personal finances. I pay my people even if I can't pay me, he says. I keep hearing about help that's coming for small businesses like mine, but I haven't been able to learn what I can expect and in what time frame. I'm literally not going to be able to make payroll next week, which bothers me a lot more than not being able to make the hefty insurance payment at the same time. Hmm. Parenthetically, that's fair, close parentheses. Mm-hmm. I could use help finding out what help to apply for, from whom, and what kind of help I can hope to obtain. I believe in doing the right thing, and I'm trying to figure out how to do the contradictory things of paying my people and not risking anybody's health. So all of that comes as Congress has passed and the president has signed that $2 trillion rescue package. It's supposed to put money in our pockets, both personally and from a small business point of view. And what we're going to try to do today is figure out who gets what and how you get it. That's, I think, for me, the nut graph right there.
Yep, absolutely. I think that's the nut graph for just about everybody.
Yeah.
It is Tuesday. I want to remind you, this is our normal weekly episode. There will not be a shorty.
Yes.
Today.
Yes.
And so as a result, we have the, there will be, I put one in. I just went ahead and made an editorial decision there.
That's too funny.
We all need it, man. We all need it. But we have the luxury of bringing a guest on to join us today and help explain this, we hope. Andrew Stettner is a senior fellow at the Century Foundation. He's been looking closely at this bill, what it provides, and also what the challenges with the rollout are going to look like, because I think we can safely assume there will be some. Andrew, thanks for coming on Make Me Smart.
Thanks for having me.
So, big picture, let's start with the payments to individuals. For those who haven't actually gotten word yet, who's getting what how are they going to get that?
Well, the good news is a lot of people will get something, but as usual, not everybody. So there's two main things that are being delivered. One is called a stimulus payment. Some people will call them their Yang checks. But to help cushion the blow of the immediate nature and to buoy the economy, there will be a payment of $1,200 for every adult and additional $500 for children that are the age 16 or younger. And that'll go to your folks, if people are listening. This will go to everyone who's filed taxes last year, and also to Social Security retirement beneficiaries, whether or not they filed taxes.
And how are they going to get it? Do they have to do anything?
The benefit of this is if you filed your taxes, you will not have to do anything to get this money. And even if you're on Social Security, you will not have to do anything. Now, if you have not filed your taxes, especially if you're someone who is a low-income person who it didn't even make sense to file your taxes last year, you're going to have to file your taxes to get it. So that's going to be one of the biggest goals. Also, unfortunately, if you're a college student and you're dependent on your parents, but you're still over 18, you also don't get it. And that's another big hole in this program.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's interesting.
That's a big hole.
My 21-year-old's going to be pissed. And my 18-year-old.
Yeah.
That's a whole different thing. He literally asked, the 18-year-old asked me the other night whether he gets this money. And I'm like, I don't know, babe. Now I know.
Huh. Turns out, no. Well, so we'll get to some of those loopholes in a minute. But even before that, it's not really everyone, right? Isn't there? There's also sort of like an income limit. And are people going to get checks that they're going to be expected to pay back later because they made too much money?
So the income limit for this will be $75,000 for an individual or $150,000 for a household. And, you know, it, as you approach those numbers, you're not going to get the full $1,200 and $500. So it will scale down as you get closer to those numbers. You're not going to be in a position of having to pay this money back. It is a stimulus payment. So you shouldn't have to worry about paying the money back, especially if you're in that low income category, really needing the money. So that's the first set now. And then we'll get into, in addition to this money, the big news is that Congress wanted to put unemployment pay on steroids. Yeah. So if you're out of work, you can get a little bit more, which is really important.
Right.
And that coverage for who gets unemployment pay is expanded, right?
Right. So they've done two big things to make unemployment a real thing. Going into this, less than one out of four unemployed people were getting an unemployment check. So they kind of knew if this is going to be important, they're going to really have to fix this system. So they did two things. First of all, they're going to give people an extra $600 per week in unemployment through the end of July. So that's $10,000from April to July in money to help replace wages. And then they're going to fill some of the holes if you're a self-employed, if you're a gig worker, if you just started a job, and even if you had accepted a job, but didn't even get to the first day because of COVID, you're going to be able to get unemployment benefits in this period. So they've really beefed this up substantially. They've done this before with like natural disasters, like hurricanes, but they're doing even more with this moment.
That does seem like an even bigger deal than the stimulus and something that I haven't heard that much about, although I have heard from my one of what will soon be many friends who's been laid off that the filing for unemployment is already a mess and bound to even get messier, right?
For sure. I mean, they're processing some states 10 times as much as they usually process. You know, the unemployment claims hit a record that was five times the previous record, but those are only people that got through. So it is, luckily, most states do most of their initial applications online. So as long as the website, you know, holds up, you know, people are able to get their applications through. But even they've had some problems with the websites even just maintaining business. The big problem, unlike the stimulus payment, is sometimes people might have a question or they might do something wrong on the application. And then, you know, then you're trying to get into, a tiny hole of hundreds of thousands of people trying to call the same person. So some people are getting through, but people are really getting frustrated without being able to get answers or correct a mistake that they've made on their claim.
Can I just ask an economic indicator question? So last week, of course, we got this 3.3 million people filing first-time claims number. If I hear you right, hearing between the lines, it was probably more people who would have applied if they could have gotten through to the website, right?
Yeah, and I think people have kind of extrapolated from the little tidbits and press releases and reports. The White House admonished the states for telling how many people were applying for benefits because they were getting nervous that it was making the market spooked. But they've been saying it anyways. And economists looked at this and they're predicting that there could be another 4.1 million people that file for benefits. These aren't the same people. These are new people on top of the new people last week. You know, we estimated that there's going to be probably 11 million new people filing for unemployment insurance. And people are thinking that we might be too low in seeing how many people are going to be trying to access this system, which is made to expand during bad times. But it's never seen, and this country has probably never seen anything quite like this period.
Right. Huh. How long do those benefits last? They're limited in duration now, right?
Correct. But they've been extended and expanded. So right now, unemployment benefits usually last 26 weeks. There are a few states that pay less. But those have now been extended for another 13 weeks. So most people, you know, are going to be in a situation if they get laid off on April 1st, they would at least be able to count on unemployment through the end of the year. if they needed it. So that's, you know, and then that extra $600, which really is going to keep people whole, will last through the end of July.
Okay. So small businesses, let's get to them. Let's say I run a company that's got 150 employees, and I'm going to need some help not laying them off. What's in this package for me, and how do I get that assistance?
So I think this is an area where the small business community has a lot of concerns about what Congress did. You know, they one group that I follow was pushing a line last week, hashtag grants, not loans.
Yeah.
So the idea is if you want small businesses to maintain their payroll, you should be giving them a grant that they don't have to pay back versus asking them to take a loan. That call did not get heeded. There is a $10,000 grant available, but the big thing was loans. They are allowing for loans up to $10 million to small businesses, but these loans will have to be paid back. Now, not all of it has to be paid back, which is a big deal. One thing they did, which I think was smart, is they did not only have the government making these loans. You're going to be able to go to a bank, hopefully your bank or your credit union that works with the Small Business Administration to make a loan. So you should be able to go to somebody who knows you to make this loan. You will be able to get this called a paycheck protection loan. So the real idea is to help people, you know, maintain their payroll. And so you can get that part of your loan forgiven if you're able to maintain your payrolls coming out of this.
Right. If you don't lay anybody off. Yeah.
Right. That's the name of the game. But you go to your regular bank, you don't have to like do something special with the SBA directly. You just go to your friendly neighborhood lender and say, I want to apply for this loan.
Your bank has to have the relationship with the Small Business Administration. So already have a network of lenders that they work with, but they are calling on more banks, all banks, to join that network.
Gotcha.
So
gotcha.
Speaking of your friendly neighborhood bank, we have had times of recessions somewhat recently in this country in which lending standards were tightened. I mean, are people going to go in and apply for these loans and be turned down?
I think people are worried about that, you know, that, you know, the small businesses, maybe minority-owned small businesses, women-owned businesses that, you know, are not seen, you know, as credit-worthy, maybe turned down this. The Small Business Administration is backing the loans for the banks. So the banks don't really have a lot of risk, you know, involved. They will have standards that the SBA is putting on. I think what I've heard about the big problem for smaller businesses is, are they willing to take a loan, you know, for this? And will the money reach them quick enough to avoid them having to close down? You know, so are they willing to take a loan that's conditioned on getting back to business? And can they get them quick enough? But Congress did try some of the usual things that you need for a loan, like personal collateral. They're waiving that. So there's some big deals in this package that give this a chance, you know, to work at least for some small businesses.
Wow.
So here comes a subjective question, and it goes like this. How big a goat rope is this going to be for individuals trying to find unemployment and for companies trying to get a loan that's going to get them through like the next 2 months? I mean, you know, you could run out of money before this loan comes through. And it just seems to me that there's a timing issue here. We're trying to thread a needle that is really, really tight.
I think you're right. You know, I think the things that will be the most effective in this package are the things that are building on systems that we already have. The government may have trouble with all this demand, but they kind of know how to get people on unemployment. The government knows how to send out tax refunds. They already have your banking information. These things where people are going to have to apply and go through a process in a brand new program, these are going to be the hardest, you know, parts of the package, you know, to work, especially, you know, smaller businesses. I don't think that the package was quite as generous to them as big businesses, and they have less, you know, bandwidth to deal with it. So that, Kai, that's why I'm really worried. You know, I think there's some version of this that people feel like, okay, we're all just hunkered down.
Yeah.
When this is over, we can all just go back to work. Yep. Unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of businesses that are closed. And as you well know, these crises can accelerate changes in the economy. Retailers, large and small, were already having a hard time. And some of them will not recover from this and may accelerate some of the changes that we're already seeing in our economy.
Andrew Stettner is a senior fellow at the Century Foundation. He's been looking closely at the bill. Thank you. You legitimately made us smart, if a little furious, on behalf of our friend Christopher Bartlett, who you heard from at the top of the show. Andrew, appreciate it. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Molly. Thank you, Kai.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks
for coming on. Take good care.
Yeah. So it's just reacting to a Slack that I got from Sam as he was answering that question, Andrew was.
Mm-hmm.
Sam differentiated between goat rope and goat ropes, because there will be many goat ropes in this thing, right? There's the small business goat rope. There's the unemployed individual goat rope. There's the big company goat rope. Although I would bet money that, like, when Boeing goes and asks for its share of this money, it will not be very goat ropey. It will be fairly streamlined.
I would imagine that too. Yeah, I mean, I can't lie. Like, that's got to be disappointing. I know that small businesses were already disappointed, and it is really pretty heartbreaking too. Like, you will see in the video my face getting all red when he talks about the people who might not get these loans at all. And it is heartbreaking to not have good news for Christopher Bartlett.
Okay, we're gonna go. We're gonna go on. Yes.
Yeah.
There will be more, because you know what? This is gonna last for a while. This is gonna last for a while.
Well, and this is not enough. So there's that.
That is true. Well, so look, we could talk more about, and maybe we will on the daily edition of this podcast, which is the next stimulus package that's going to come, because there is going to be one that's going to come, right? Because $2 trillion, as insane as this sounds to say, $2 trillion is not going to be enough money. But I kind of buried the lead there. We do a daily version of this podcast now. we do it every single day of the week, Monday through Friday. There is beer on Fridays. Wednesdays are Questions Day. So shoot us a note, shoot us a line, drop us a voice memo, whatever you want. Let us know what's on your mind. If you've got a question, we'll try to get it answered. MakeMeSmartAtMarketplace.org, and we'll be back in a minute.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more, Wondery means business.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews, and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes every Sunday wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everyone. Let's do the news fix. I should clarify one thing, which is that this counts as the daily show. There's not going to be like another shorty later, so we don't want to confuse you. You will get a Make Me Smart episode every day. They will be longer on Tuesdays, i.e. this one.
This
right
is
now. So many details to work out.
You want to go first?
Sure. Actually, yes, because the thing I have for my news fix is very related to this particular bill and like a thing that was kind of amiss that now House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Representative Ro Khanna, who represents Silicon Valley in California, they have written to Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and the Small Business Administrator, Jovita Carranza, which is not a name I knew until today.
Wow. Nice job.
I know. Thanks. One thing that startups realized almost immediately, and my VC Twitter was full of it, is that this stimulus bill basically, even though most startups are small businesses with fewer than 500 employees, if they are venture-backed, the criteria for the bills, the criteria for the loans, according to the Small Business Administration, is that all startups that are backed by the same venture capital firm are considered the same business.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Yes. So let's say you are Sequoia Capital, a very large venture capital firm, and you have given money, you have invested in 35 companies at various stages of development and size. All of those companies are considered one company under the terms of the stimulus bill because they got money from the same venture capital firm. So none of those 35 companies, which might include, I mean, probably not at this point, but maybe like Instacart, right?
Right.
The
company
that is crucial to delivering
those
groceries right now, or or a telemedicine company. I mean, you can think of a bajillion examples of startups who are small businesses who would need some version of these loans are literally left out because of this weird super Spock moment of logic that occurred here, which is that they're all considered the same company because they all got money from the same venture capital firm, which, by the way, is not like its own, you know, we have explained many times how venture capital works, but just one more time, they're investing other people's money. And most of that money comes from pension funds and university endowments and big banks. But it's not like that. That is like so logically baffling that when I first saw it pop up on, I mean, it just really.
It's my new podcast, Logically Baffling.
Logically baffling. Anyway, so yes, they're hoping to get that one fixed before most of Silicon Valley goes out of business. Well, yeah, that one. Wow. When I first thought, VC Twitter hasn't been very sympathetic for most
They don't inspire a lot of sympathy, right? I mean, you know.
The coronavirus situation, if I'm being honest. But this was one where when I first started seeing it pop up, I was like, wait a minute. And then when I saw it all broken down in this way, I was like, yeah, no, you are. That is crazy talk.
Yeah.
So that's what I got for you today.
I had totally not been aware of that. That's awesome. Look at that. I got smarter.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, and now I see you have another 1990. This one's like at least a 1998-looking website.
So I got a little dorky yesterday on the daily version of this podcast in explaining how the unemployment numbers are measured, and it's something called the reference week that the Department of Labor uses. And if you want to know about it, go back and listen. Today, just because Goldman Sachs has come out with a new estimate of how bad this economy is going to be in Q2, the second quarter, I need to make people understand what's going on. So Goldman Sachs came out either late last night or early this morning and said, we estimate Q2 economic growth will fall 34%. And everybody went, oh my God, 34%. That's legitimately, because 34% is a huge number when you're talking about economic shrinkage, right? But that's not actually what they meant. What they meant was, on an annualized basis, Q2 economic growth will be 34% down. What that translates into is 8% on a quarterly basis, right? All these numbers that you see for gross domestic product growth and shrinkage are on an annualized basis. So in normal times, you might hear me come on Marketplace and say, the Department of Commerce announced today the GDP grew 2.2% in the second quarter on an annualized basis, right? So that means if the growth rate in that quarter continued for the whole year, it would work out to be 2.2%. So everybody just take a chill pill when you read that Goldman Sachs note. Or if you're a normal human being and don't read Goldman Sachs notes, now you know what now you know what annualized means, okay? It's just in that instant, if it carried over for the whole year, that's it. And I just think that's important because we're going to be seeing a whole lot of growth figures or not growth figures in the next number of quarters. And that's it. That's all I want to say. Wasn't that bad, was it?
I appreciate. No, really the problem was I scrolled down on your little website from the DallasFed.org and looked at all these math problems and they were like, the formula for annualizing monthly data is straightforward.
The formulas are horrifying. They're so
horrifying. G to the M equals bracket XM over XM minus 1. I was just like, Kai, what have you done? What have you done?
Don't do that. Look, I'm a history and political science guy, man. I'm not a math guy.
After you go and you look at the annualized data formulas, which are fairly straightforward, according to the Dallas Fed, You should also go and click this link to this XKCD comic that is making rounds that I think was just published. And it is a comic written. I mean, if you're not familiar with this comic,
it was really good.
Brilliant. It's the best.
Yeah.
This one's absolutely wonderful. It is a make me smile. There is no way I'm going to try to summarize the genius of an XKCD cartoon. Just trust me when I say go to makemesmart.org.
Yep.
And click the link.
For sure.
And maybe we can even embed
it's
it
awesome.
Because it's basically wonderful and it will definitely make you smile.
Yeah.
It's a delayed make me smile. It's like a grenade make me smile. Like I throw it, you go grab it, the smile explodes. Okay, never mind.
What is today Friday? Do we have beer in the podcast today?
The metaphor didn't work that well. Kai, I have been drunk for 20 days.
Grenades are bad. All right, that's it for the news. But there's more from us on your smart speaker devices. Every single day, we've got explainers, Molly and me, to give you context on everything that is going on. Today, I'm on there talking about the remote work gap, which is a real thing. Tomorrow, it's going to be Molly telling you about grocery delivery, also a real thing. So, over your morning coffee or your afternoon beer, good stuff, not what Molly drinks, tell your device to make me smart and give a listen.
Your Echo device, to be specific.
Yes.
You know the one we mean. All right, it's your turn.
Hi, Kai and Molly.
This is Brent in Detroit.
This is Rebecca from Baltimore.
It was great to hear comments on my question about GDPR.
I wanted to put in my vote.
I want to discuss a slightly different but maybe related thing.
Everything is related right now. Before we actually get to your mail, we want to say thank you for all the mail. It is working. You are sending more emails and voice memos and personal stories and perspectives and feelings and prayer. I mean, we have gotten just unbelievable feedback and just thanks from you, which means so much because it's such a weird time and we're just in the basement hoping we're doing the best we can. So if we don't get to your message on the show, please know we are reading all of them. Sam Anderson and Tony Wagner read every single one of those messages. They're doing their best to keep up, and they're putting them in our Slack channel every day, every time they think they like psychically know when we need to pick me up, and they drop one of those into the Slack, and it really helps. So thank you. Literally, thank you.
Steve Inskeep said this morning at the top of Morning Edition, he said, good morning on a Tuesday, because it's good to keep track, which it totally is. Right? I mean, look, it was a good line. Okay, first actual mailbag item today comes from Barnaby Keller. It's a comment that kind of hits at the intersection between supply chains and healthcare, which is, of course, critical right now. Here's what he says. My company, Keller Technology, is a machinery manufacturer. We have capacity and can build N95 mask machines as well as ventilators or any other equipment or custom automation machinery to produce medical supplies needed for the crisis. We keep hearing about the needs and the shortage, but we can't seem to find traction with the right people to get things going. It's been difficult to cut through the noise and get to the decision makers. All this talk about repurposing automotive and other factories is not necessary when there is custom manufacturing capacity like we have waiting and ready to help. We've built mask machines before for one of the major mask producers, but they're holding back from deploying our experience and capacity to build their mask machines. This kind of goes to what we were saying with Andrew about the goat rope nature of this whole thing. So look, we checked in with Barnaby. He sent that on Thursday. We checked in with him yesterday, and he said he got in touch with the FDA. Apparently, the FDA said, good, but you got to go talk to Health and Human Services. So now they're reaching out to the White House, and it's a mess. And I think that's a real challenge, you know? It's a real challenge.
And it's all phone tag, and they could be building machines. Yeah. Well, and I mean, there are a couple things happening here, not least of which is just the simple fact that there's not a I do not mean this to be like a call out to Silicon Valley, but there is not like an Uber, you know, an app that connects buyers with sellers. And these are not markets that currently exist because there's not usually enough need for these things. However, it is also not being coordinated at a national scale. It's being left to state by city, by county. And everybody's sort of trying to procure their own. And so you have all of these people in this business and they're not sure even who to call.
Right.
Because, I don't know, if it were work, you'd be like, we need a single point of contact for this process.
Yeah,
and that does not exist.
It's like work for 340 million people, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's why there's a
it's
federal government. Like, there is a single, in theory, there's an easy single point of contact. They can do some top-down distribution.
Yeah.
Anyway, we will hear from Liz Zimmerman, a small coffee shop owner from Oklahoma City. Here is her experience with the shutdown.
Hi, Kai and Molly. This is Liz from Oklahoma City.
My husband and I own a coffee shop called Leaf and Bean and have been doing everything we can to keep the business up and running and our employees paid. We applied for an SBA loan, but are also trying to find creative ways to generate revenue while keeping our staff and customers safe. My husband has come up with some great ideas like selling quarantine coffee club t-shirts, pins, bags of coffee all online. And it's been really encouraging to see our community's response to rally support for us. But we're only at the beginning of this outbreak, and seeing how slow the government has been to respond and prepare, I worry a lot about how quickly the SBA can get funding to little shops like ours so we can keep our staff paid through this pandemic. Thanks for all the work you and your team do to keep us smart and informed in times like these. And once this is all over, come down to OKC and I'll buy you a cup of coffee.
I'll be there. I'll be there. But, you know, see aforementioned comments on goat ropes, right? You know, it's, yeah.
I mean, look, it's heartbreaking. There will be a Delta during which not everybody will be able to stay open. And that's awful.
Right. Right. One more from Alex Black. Not what you would might consider usual content for this podcast, but they are kind words. And I think we're just going to hit them. Here you go.
Hey, Molly and Kai, this is Alex from Asheville, North Carolina. I don't have any particular insider question, but I wanted to share just how reassuring it's been having you all in my feed the last few days. I think I've really come to trust your voices from everything you've done on Make Me Smart and Marketplace the last couple of years. And I'm really glad that you're doing this daily podcast. You know, I know for all of us, when in times like this, it can be easy to get down on things or feel anxious. And I think the work that you all are doing, you know, is helping me and probably helping a lot of other people just kind of quell that anxiety and feel like we have someone who kind of understands and is there to help us through things. So thank you so much for the work you're doing.
Well, Alex, thank you. I appreciate that.
I know. I'm a little teary today. It's Tuesday.
Look, it's okay to feel anxious. It's okay to feel anxious, even on a Tuesday.
Yep. And it's okay to bounce between like worrying about the whole world and worrying about your little corner of the world and back and forth again. And maybe just like saying, I'm going to try not to worry today. I'm just going to try to, I don't know, fold some laundry. Now, though, we are going to turn to the Make Me Smart question, and you are going to love it because finally, after the constant shout outs and the commentary and the jokes and the texts and the tweets and the time we literally tried to name the entire pandemic shutdown after him, the famous Ben Holiday, a.k.a. Bent Holiday, has finally decided to grace us with his answer to the Make Me Smart question.
Hey, Molly and Kai. It's Ben Holiday here. I'm very flattered that you guys seem to miss me so much. I've been listening in and really enjoying the show. My answer to the Make Me Smart question is this. Never in my wildest dreams could I have imagined how much mileage you two could get from the pronunciation of my name. Just when I think the gag has run out of steam, it comes back again. And now you want to call this coronavirus lockdown period a bent holiday? Anyways, hope you're staying healthy, and I look forward to catching up when I'm back at work next week.
So Ben has been off on a music project, which I am anxious to hear about, but how about that? Come on. That's a little Mickey smile right there. Huh?
Aww,
come
on, it's man. So nice to hear Ben's right? voice.
Yeah.
He is both is restrained, professional, and charming as always. Thanks for taking it in the spirit we think we intended, Ben.
Yes, we think. I don't know what it was in the beginning.
We think we're hilarious.
A go-to for us. It has become a go-to. All right, so we're out of here. Before we go, a quick reminder, sign up for our newsletter. Comes out every Friday. Lots of stuff that will make you smart. Go to marketplace.org/newsletters. There's all kinds of good stuff in there. I actually really enjoy it. As opposed to most newsletters, which I don't actually even open. Sorry, did I say that out loud?
No, it's sorry. True. There are sorry. So many.
Sorry.
There are so many. But ours is so good. Make Me Smart is ably produced and directed by Sam Anderson. Our digital producer is Tony Wagner. Our senior producer is Jody Becker. Thank you to our video producer, Ben Heathcote, and our video intern, Ethan Peretz. And thank you to writer-producer, Erica Phillips. She does the newsletter.
She does. This week's program was engineered by Drew Jostad. In the role, it was mixed by Daniel Ramirez. Our theme music was composed by... Yes, him. And
say
Daniel
it with
Ramirez,
us.
The executive director on demand. All right, you got to do it the same way, though, right? You got to do it, Ben...
Ben.
Holiday.
Saved Holiday.
And Daniel Ramirez, the executive director of On Demand, is Satar Nieves, the senior vice president and general manager, is Deborah Clark. And that's what we got.
That's what we got. Deb.
All right, so I
Clark.
Deb Clark. I put some new lighting in here, by the way. I hope it shows up on the video.
Ooh.
I probably look like some kind of ghoul or something. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.